Today's daf, gentlemen, in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Kufchet, and we are holding at the Halakha Mishnah, which we would love to introduce from an island deep in the Baltic, but in which we see that we've got a very reluctant Kapitan this morning.
What can I tell you? Let me get out. Running a little late. There we go.
No.
Zook the Halakha Mishnah.
Oh, thank you. Wonderful way to start a day. So, we've got our Mishnah right there towards the bottom of Amud Beis. And we've been talking about the Din of Miyun and the interrelationship of the Din of Miyun in a very complex way to the underlying issues of Yibum. Let's go now, and again, remember, there's always the Seder of the Mishnah. Let's discuss more what Kiddushei Ketana consists of, and which type of Ketana was there a Takana of Miyun for anyway. So, a Zohi Ketana Shetzricha Lama'in. What is considered to be a marriage of a Ketana for which the Rabbanan were Mitakein Miyun? Only if they married her off, asking her if that's okay. So at least she understands to some extent. But if she says, I don't want to get married, then she doesn't even need miyun afterwards, because that is not considered to be a nisui ketana. And that is a whole question between the Rishonim, we'll see the Diyukim in the Gemara that have to do with this, whether a Ketana would be able to be Mekabelet Kiddushin on her own and still require Miyun. That's a different issue. So remember, this is called Kiddushei Miyun. The question of whether an ongoing relationship with the Ketana would be usur without Kiddushei Miyun is yet another question, because as we saw, Tosis explains that the so-called marriage of a katan, where there never was a takana that it's required yet or anything like that, nonetheless, the Rabbanan did not asur it, and they never suggested that it's a bad idea. They just were not mitaken a type of kiddushin for it. And perhaps the same thing is true. If a ketana chooses a relationship with someone and she doesn't have relatives that are taking care of her, so then that idea, maybe it's not Mechayev Miyun at the end. Maybe it is. That's a machloket. But there certainly doesn't seem to be anything problematic about that. So in any event, the Kiddushei Miyun is only where she has some minimal understanding of the Kiddush. So if, therefore, she also is able to be Shomer at the Kiddush, as Rabbi Hanina ben Antiglis points out, if she doesn't even understand enough to be shomer at the kiddushin, let's say we give her a shtar of kiddushin, we give her a ring, we say this is the ring that was given to you, or this is the money that was given to you, and it doesn't mean anything to her in terms of taking care of it, because it has some value in the sense of her own personal status, not that she stopped watching it the way she would watch a lollipop. Richie, oh, mute.
Yeah.
So sorry. If she doesn't even understand that, then she doesn't even need miyun, because she was never mikudesha. She has to at least be, and this is the age of the pu'utot that we said that she has some understanding of things, and that's why, as the Rambam says, a ketana would have to be about 6 years old, you know? And then we'll check her out. If she's already 10 years old, then we don't even have to check her out mentally. We understand that she knows what's going on. Okay. And more that the Rambam goes through, less than six, we for sure don't assume that she knows what's going on. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Ein ma'ase ketana klum. You don't understand this idea of miyun. When we say that she's married, and you're making it sound like this marriage actually has issues that are defined by a normal marriage, you're wrong. There is no such thing as a kiddushin of miyun. There's a relationship of miyun, but it's a casual relationship, and it does not have any implications of marriage. So those implications, of course, we're going to explain, but we know what those kind of implications are. It has to do with Yerusha. It has to do with if he's a Kohen, can she eat truma? Is he metame for her? And so on and so forth. So what Rebbe Eliezer is saying, it is not really a kedushin. It's just kimefuta. It's as if she was seduced. And therefore, she does need miyun, but if after she walks out on him, it's not as if she were ever married to him. And even while she's married, so to speak, to him, she doesn't have the rights of a wife and he the rights of a husband. Therefore, a Bat Yisrael who gets married to a Kohen is not allowed to eat truma, because she's even derabanan, because she's not considered to be his wife. If she is a Bat Kohen and he is a non-Kohen, he doesn't prevent her from eating truma the way a marriage to a Yisrael normally would. And therefore, tochal betruma, let her continue eating the truma beis avia, because she's not considered to be married to her at all. And therefore, what we're saying is, we're going to see in the Gemara, we're going to see that in the Rebbe Eliezer expands this to include all types of things. There's no Yerusha, there's no Afaras Nedarim, and so on. But that we'll wait till we get to the Braisa to look into that. And therefore, it's not considered to be a marriage bichlal. It's just a mefuteh. Now, Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, look, you also have to judge the situation. Kol akava shehi min ha'ish. If what's holding her back to be in this relationship is completely dependent in the male, then it is basically a relationship of ishut. But if it isn't from the male, it's just from her, then it is not as if there is ishut. Now, this is a big machlokas in the Gemara. What do we mean when we talk about kol akava? So according to Shmuel, we're going to see that what it means is that, let's say someone comes over and gives her an offer of marriage, and she says to him, well, I'm sorry, but I'm married. So then that means that she views her relationship as something that she desires to continue. So that's considered to be the akava min ha'ish, meaning it's because of her relationship to her husband that she is denying a relationship to anyone else. But suppose someone approaches her with an offer of marriage. So the shatchan comes to her and says, oh, I got this great shidduch for you. He tells this six-year-old, I've got this great shidduch for you. And her response is, he's not good enough for me. Well, boy, she's a real six-year-old, let me tell you. He's not good enough for me. So then the akava is not because she's married. She's ignoring the fact that she's married. In other words, if you get me a better shidduch, I'd be happy to take it. Why would you be happy to take it? Aren't you married? So obviously she's saying that she's not married, right?
We've already established what you are. It's just a question of the price.
So anyway, this is considered to be, according to Rashi's approach of the sugya, this is considered to be the equivalent of miyun. According to Tosis's approach in the sugya, we're not talking about the equivalency to miyun. We're talking about whether this is considered to be midaata in the first place. So in other words, talking about a case where the mother had married her, never had asked her, and then somebody comes and offers her an alternative shidduch, and she says, well, I'm married. So that means she accepts the fact that she's married. And if she says, well, he's not good enough for me, then she doesn't accept the fact that she's married. But it's not necessarily the equivalent of miyun, because we're going to see in the sugya that it's a big machlokas whether oblique references to miyun is enough to create a miyun, or you need an actual clear-cut statement, I don't like this guy, which is basically what the Gemara now is about to discuss. What do we put into an actual get of miyun, which we call a shtar of miyun, that allows her to go and marry somebody else? Which is why the first thing that we discuss in the Gemara is exactly this problem. Initially, when the witnesses would write out the get of miyun, which means a shtar of miyun, that she's able to present to other people in the future, and they say, weren't you married by your mother to such and such a guy? Oh, I was mema'enet. How do we know you were mema'enet? So she's able to show this get, right? So originally, the way in which that was written was, rishona, hayu kotvim get mi'un. And it had the following language in it, which is full of legalese. And it sounds like it's really important how exactly, you know, we love to make things sound official, you know. So originally we made it sound very official with all the ribbons and the stamps and so on. And it said, lo re'ina be, lo tzavina be, letana be, l'nesavale. Wow, this, whew, that's complicated girsa over here. So I don't like this guy. I don't want this guy. I don't desire to be married to this guy. Well, kiva dechazin nafish dibura, when they realized this is an awful lot of unnecessary blabbing, they were mitakein not to write that. Why? Because Amre said to themselves, listen, this thing sounds so legal that it basically, some idiot of a sofer who writes this thing might actually think that this is an official document. After all, it's called a get miyun. And he'll say, wow, that I like that. So when he comes to write a get, a real get, he'll write it like this. I don't like him. I don't know. This is ridiculous. For a real get, that's absurd. So, you know, a sofer may be basically just an AI. He doesn't know what he's doing. And okay, so he thinks this sounds very official. So because of that, they changed it. And they made it read, here is miyun for dummies. Quote, on such and such a date, such and such a woman gave miyun in front of us. Period. That's it. So what was the miyun? Doesn't discuss what the miyun was. Nobody can mistake this for a get. Anyway, that's basically the way Rashi and Tosfos understand the issue over here. Some Rishonim taina that there's other issues over here. The other issue is that the guy's stupid enough to give it as a get, but that people, not a sofer, people might think that it's really a get. So that if it's really a get, they will think, well, that means that she must have been truly married to him. And therefore, let's say his brother gives her kiddushin, and they'll say, oh, it's ridiculous, can't marry your husband's brother. So they'll just tell her, forget about it. But what do you mean forget about it? But your eyes, she's married to him. That would be a disaster. So in order to avoid people's confusing it with a get, that's why we wanted to make it very clear. It's not a complicated legal document. It's just a report of testimony that we saw miyun. That's all. Tana Rabbana, what is considered to be a miyun, actually? Is a miyun an indication? Is a miyun a particular language? Is it achievable by making it very clear but not saying a word? What exactly is included in miyun? So if she says, I don't like this guy and I don't want this husband, or she says, if she be kiddushin, she kiddushini imivach, I don't like this marriage that my mother made or my brothers made. But Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you don't need any kind of proclamation like that in front of people and so on. Let's say, imagine a case. We have this girl in a palanquin. We are carrying her from the home towards the chuppah. And everybody's dancing around her. And she tells the people that are carrying her, you know, I don't like this at all. She's on her way, mi beit avia le beit ba'ala. And she tells the people that, listen, I don't like this guy. I really don't like this guy. So you would think, okay, if you don't like the guy, then jump out of the palanquin. What are you sitting over there like a queen, you know? No, it doesn't matter that she doesn't jump out of the palanquin. It doesn't matter that she doesn't make a public declaration and she's just sharing her feelings with the people that are right there. She's embarrassed. And I mean, she's a little girl. You're the carrier. She's going to jump out and run away and everybody's going to look at her like she's nuts. And, you know, they'll make movies about it, about the runaway bride. You know, I mean, she's seen all those movies. She doesn't want to be in that kind of situation. So therefore, says Rabbi Yehuda, that's enough. She doesn't have to make it an official proclamation as long as people heard it. So, and I'll tell you, that's called a mien, but I'll tell you even a bigger case. They take her, bring her to the house. There's guests all over, right? And she goes around serving liquor to everybody, you know, and there's balloons and wow. I mean, what she's serving everybody drinks for, you know, she obviously is into this, right? And she tells the people, man, this is crazy. I'm just a kid. I don't want to be married. I don't like this guy. Meanwhile, she's handing out the drinks. So even there, says Reb Yehuda, over there, where she doesn't even think that the people are going to tell other people what she said. It's just like she's sharing her own feelings. Even that would be considered to mean. And I'll take another case. Imagine a case like this. Imagine a case where Yeter al kein, Amar Reb Yehuda, her husband sends her to the grocery store. And he says, could you please get some coffee at the grocery store? Well, you get out of bed and go to the grocery store. So she goes to the grocery store and she tells the grocer, she says, this guy is a jerk. I hate him. Now, over there, you could think, listen, there's not two Adim over there. There were two Adim outside that heard her. So there's not two Adim over there. And she's mad that he threw her out of bed to go to the grocery store. Go to the grocery store yourself, you jerk. You see, you would think, okay, that's considered to be an altercation. It's not considered to be a mion. Even in that case, says Reb Yehuda, it would be a total mion. Ein lecha mion gadol mizeh. Saying something is not as powerful as giving a real emotional outburst. That is what mion is about. And don't try to tell me that mion is after a long considered decision that I want to walk out on him. The whole point of mion is that it allows her an out. Because if she feels that she's trapped, that itself is abusive, which is a tremendous insight here, the way Reb Yehuda is understanding mion. What we're looking at is an abusive relationship, not sexual abuse. The fact that I should feel what he's going to be able to send me to the grocery store whenever he wants to, and I have no way of getting out of this, and I'm scared of him. I want out. Thank you very much. Walk out. Nobody's going to tell you not to walk out, and everybody will prevent him from coming after you. That's the point, in which case the whole idea of Kiddushei Mion is to avoid any type of psychological sense of being trapped, which is what, for a ketana, a marriage would mean. Rabbi Hanina's ben Atigna Somer, if she's so young, she doesn't even understand that this is meaningful and that she should keep her Kiddushin, so she's not able to be Shomeret, her Kiddushin, that's not shaykh to a din of Kiddushei Miyun at all. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, that's how we paskin. Halachic Rabbi Hanina ben Antigna. Now here, let's take a look at other issues that might be the equivalent of Miyun. For instance, let's say a ketana who never did miyun, she goes out and she marries somebody else. So Mishum Reb Yehuda ben Beteira Amru, well, she doesn't need to do a miyun. It's not that the miyun is necessary to first have an official act to be mevatel the original marriage. The fact that she marries somebody else is a miyun. In other words, it doesn't have to be a formal ending to the marriage. Because remember that miyun is an annulment. It's not the end of a marriage. It's a complete cancellation. Therefore, if she goes and marries somebody else, ipso facto, the original marriage is annulled. So why did there need to be an official end to a marriage that never existed, you see? So this is a profound insight into the way that miyun works. It's not the equivalent of a get. And therefore, it would be, says Reb Yehuda ben Beseira, the very fact that she married somebody else is a miyun. Well, but suppose she only accepted kiddushin from somebody else. So that is not as powerful an act of refusal of her first husband, because, I mean, she's not ready to go to bed with this guy. So maybe that would not be considered a miyun. Is that itself enough? Just nitkatsha mahu. Or we have an answer from a braita. Kitana shalomiana ve'amda ve'nitkatsha. Here it doesn't say amda ve'nisait. She went ahead and she accepted kedushin. Here too, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira says the same thing. kiddusheha hein hein miuneha. It's not only nisuin that creates miun, it is even just accepting kiddushin. Iboilu. Now the question is, we just had this din of Rabbi Yehuda ben Batira. We don't really know whether, is this a controversial psak, or does everybody agree to this psak? So, first of all, I'd like to understand, is there a machlokas? Do the Rabbanan disagree with Rabbi Yehuda ben Batira, or not? Maybe they also agree that you don't need a separate step called miyun. And if they do argue, imtim tzoloma, they do argue, is that only in this second case of Rabbi Yehuda ben Batira, where she accepted kiddushin, but she did not indicate she's ready to go to bed with this guy? Or is it, would even in a case where she mamish went out and married another guy, would they argue with Rabbi Yehuda ben Batira even there? And would they say that it still is necessary to have an official proclamation? And that we wouldn't view it as a marriage to another guy? And let's say that they argue in both cases, kiddushin and nisuin. Who do we paskin like? If they argue on him, do we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda ben Batira or not? So alacha kamoto and ein alacha kamoto. And I've got yet another issue. And that is, let's say that they argue, and let's say that you'll tell me that the psak halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda ben Batira. The question is, do we paskin like him only in the case where she jumped into a full nisuin, or even when she just accepted kedushin from another guy? Well, says the Gemara, I'll answer all of your questions, sir. Take a look at the Braita. Take a look at the psak of Shmuel. I'm Rabbi Yehuda ben Shmuel. Halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda ben Batira. Now, why did he say halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda ben Batira? So first of all, if he had the paskin, halacha Rabbi Yehuda ben Batira, obviously there's a machloket that he knows. And since we do know that Rabbi Yehuda ben Batira discussed both cases, that beferish that we saw in the Braita, that he discussed both cases of where she jumped up and accepted a kiddushin and where she jumped up and accepted a nisuin, then that means that if he's just saying stam and Shmuel doesn't express in what, it's obvious that we're paskining like Rabbi Yehuda ben Batira in both cases, and that there is indeed a machloket in both cases that needed a psak. That answers all your questions. Yes, says the Gemara, it does, but it doesn't answer my new questions. I have new questions. My new questions are, here's my question. Akati Dibayalach, you're still going to have to tell me. What was the status of the original marriage? Was she only mikudeshet to the first guy? In which case, it wasn't really such a binding kind of situation. And maybe in that type of situation, we view her accepting kedushin from another guy as a complete annulment of the original marriage. But would you say the same thing is true when she is a long-term wife of the original guy? And she was already nisuah to him, and now all she does is accept kedushin from another guy. Would you still say that that is sufficient to annul, just with a kedushin, the marriage that was more long-term here or not? So that you didn't tell me. So was she nisiva mikara, or was she just mikacha? Oh, I have an answer to that too. And I'm answering that from an insight, what appears to be an insight into a previous story. Remember the story of Avdan, where poor Avdan insulted Rabbi Yishmael, and because of that, there was the whole Maisa. Rabbi tells him, "Stand where you are," and he ends up losing. He becomes mitzorah, and he ends up, two of his daughter-in-laws end up giving miyun. So apparently this is part of the same mice, even though it doesn't say beferish. So his daughter-in-laws were imarud. We're going to see, and when we learn Ksuvis, the din of merida, that they refuse intimacy with their husbands. So Rebbe sent a couple of the Talmidim to go find out whether they're willing to go back to their husbands or not. So this was like, you know, what they do today, shalom bayis, so to speak, in the Rabbanut, you know. Let's see if we can get them together. Anyway, so what happens is, as they come in, so there are these friends, of course, they're all women rights women, you know, so they're going to be very supportive of each other. So these friends come running into the wives of Abdon's sons. Watch out, your husbands are coming. They thought that these two guys are the two husbands. They didn't know. So his daughter-in-laws say to these people, and the Rabbanan overhear this, our husbands? You take them. So they should be your husbands. We don't want to see them. So Nahavi Gavraichu Ditchu. So when they came back and told Rebbe what they heard, so Rebbe said, okay, great. So they want to give away their husbands. Ein lecha miyun gadol mizeh. So you see from here that this is a miyun, and I'm assuming that they were married, right? No, not necessarily. It's possible they were only kedushin, and maybe they were, when we say they were imrud, they say, we're not going to go to bed with these guys or something like that. So it's not a classic case of merida. Anyway, so the bottom line is, even if you don't want to bring a raya from here, the bottom line is that we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda ben Tera. It doesn't matter, all cases, whether she accepted kedushin, whether she accepted nisuin, whether she was mekudeshet to husband one or menusa to husband one, it's all the same. Okay, now that concludes the issue of what constitutes a miyun. Now let us talk about what is the status of what is known as kedushei miyun. So remember that Rebbe Eliezer said, "Ein maasek tana klum." It is just the same as her being a mefuta. It's like we view her as being seduced by someone in a casual relationship. Says Rav Yehuda, you know what Shmuel told me? He said, when you look at all of the shitas over here about miyun and the way that a kedushei miyun affects someone, there is really no consistent shita except for Rav Eliezer. Everybody else is sort of half in and half out. You're like half married, half not married. The only one who really makes sense is Rebbe Eliezer. Rebbe Eliezer says straight out, look, obviously, if you can walk out on the guy, you're not married to the guy. So this is basically a casual relationship, right? Now, he is consistent with that because, as we're going to see, he says, and therefore you can't do a forest of the Dorim, and therefore there's no Yerusha, and therefore you can't be Machal Betruma, and therefore you don't go to the funeral if you're a Kohen, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All the issues that have to do with a consistent definition, are you married or are you not married? So you're not married. So that makes sense. Rebbe Eliezer says that basically what this Kedushei Miyun is only a sanctioned casual sex. That's all that it is. That's consistent, said Shmuel. But nobody else is consistent because he said, I saw Rebbe Eliezer, it's interesting, there's no word for casual in Lashon HaKodesh. So the word that Rebbe Eliezer used to explain casual sex is mitayelet imo b'chatzer. So she went for a walk, you know, so they had a casual walk. Okay, as part of the casual walk, you know, they also had some intimate relations, but that's just a casual walk. Very interesting that he was looking for a metaphor to be able to express, what do I mean by casual? So she went for a walk with him, you know, in the park. That's all. So that, since he said that, so k'mitayelet imo b'chatzer, okay, then after they finish having fun, she gets up, omedet micheko, she goes to the mikveh, and that night she goes eating truma from her father. Eating truma, you've been sleeping with this kid. Doesn't matter. It's just a casual relationship. So this is Rebbe Eliezer's total consistency about the nature of kedushei miyun. Tanya, Rebbe Eliezer Omer, this is brought out very clearly in the Braita, how consistent he is. Ein ma'asek tana klum. Then her husband, some husband, he doesn't get to keep her mitzi'ah. He does not get to have any share in ma'asei yadeha. he is not going to inherit her if she dies. If he's a Kohen, he can't go to her funeral. The klalo shel davar is, she is not his wife. Get that through your head. Eina ki ishto l'chol davar. The only thing that is different is that she needs miyun. Now we're going to see what the implication of that is. But it means, essentially, if she doesn't walk out on him, and they keep up this relationship after she becomes a gedola, then she's going to need a get, because we understand that they want to be married. Okay. Now, Rabbi Yeshua says, nonsense. He is really married to her. And because of that, the husband gets to keep her lottery winnings. And the husband gets to keep her income. And he's able to be made for Nadarim. And he inherits her. And he's metameter if he's a Kohen. Now, of course, none of this makes sense, because if he's not Midiraisa married, how can he do all of this? But remember, we explained all of this before, that in a Derabbanan marriage, the Rabbanan will use their Koyach of Hefker Bezdin Hefker to take her Yerusha, to give it to her husband. That's a Din and Hefker. What about Hafaras Nedarim? Hafaras Nedarim, we say, Isha Aldat Baala Nedaret. So that's still true over here. And therefore, he's able to be made for Nedarim. But how can he be Metameter if he's a Kohen? Oh, because she has a Din of a Meis Mitzvah. Because since he's going to inherit her, her family says, the heck with her. Why should we be worried about her funeral? Let him handle it. Okay, so then she has a Din of a Meis Mitzvah, we said before. Anyway, Kololo Shel Davar, Tainas Rabbi Yeshua, she is his full wife. There's only one difference. She does not need a get, and she can walk up a mia. That's the only difference. Oh, my Rebbe, well, Rebbe Eliezer makes much more sense than Rabbi Yeshua, because Rabbi Eliezer is consistent. He says a katana can't be married. That's all. But Rabbi Yeshua, he's like, can't make up his mind. Is she married or is she not married? What do you mean he can't make up his mind? He did make up his mind. He said that it's his wife, l'chol davar. I don't understand. Why is Rabbi Yeshua less consistent than Rabbi Eliezer, for heaven's sakes? Well, because, I mean, if she's his wife, why doesn't she need a get? And according to Rabbi Eliezer, if she's not his wife, why does she need miyun? That's just as inconsistent, isn't it? No. This is the beautiful point. What do you suggest? She should just walk out? What does that mean? Yes, that's exactly what I'm suggesting. She should just walk out. And why do we need to define what constitutes a miyun to cancel a marriage? And that's the beautiful thing that the Gemara is using over here. Let us say it's a casual relationship. Do you just walk out? No. That's the point. You don't just walk out. But what does that have to say? I mean, you confront the guy and say, look, this isn't working out. And therefore, you know, we're going to have to break up. But you don't just walk out. So miyun is not viewed as the ending of a relationship, in the sense of it's having had any official status. It's viewed as an act of derech eretz, in which case it doesn't have any implications for the legality of the relationship. It's the fact of the relationship. That, I think, is an incredible insight, right? So in making it inconsistent to hold anything other than that, you're actually having the deepest insight into why Rabbi Eliezer makes so much more sense. And then what's the last thing that we learned? Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, it depends where the akava. What does that mean? Echi domi akava shemina ish, or akava sheina mina ish, I don't understand. Well, as we explained in the Mishnah, Amr Rabbi Yoram Shmuel. Let's say that the shatchanit has a wonderful idea for her. I've got this great guy for you. And she says, yeah, but you know, I'm already married. So I don't know how I'm supposed to take up your deal over here. And she says, I can't accept that because I'm married to so-and-so, Mahmad Ploni Bali. That is called an akavashi mena'ish, because she obviously views him as being her husband. And therefore, you would need miyun, and there is no miyun. Again, according to Tosfos, it's an affirmation. We're talking about, remember, a case where the mother hadn't asked the permission. So it's an affirmation, because if you don't learn it that way, and you learn that it's the equivalent, we're looking at whether something's the equivalent of miyun or not, So then the whole discussion that we had before with Reb Yehuda seems to be moot. Even if she just walked in and so on. Well, I mean, that's what the Mishnah says, right? So she says, well, you know, I would take the shidduch, but I can't because they're not good enough for me. So if you're telling me that's a mion, then you're telling me what Reb Yehuda says. Mashenken aliba teisvis, this is a different issue. We're talking about first the initial acceptance of her mother's or her brother's or her auntie, whoever it is, decision that she should be married to this guy. If she says, however, Mahmad bin Adam she'enam uganimli, this is a guy that you're offering me, the world's greatest six-year-old? No way, Jose. So then she's not even taking into consideration that she's got a husband. She's just saying, I demand better. So Zohi HaKavash, Einam Min HaIsh, according to Rashi, and therefore it's a miyun, according to Tosfos, and therefore it's a rejection of her mother's choice initially. Abaya Baravin and Chanina Baravin both say that in the event, what it means over here is nothing like that. It means if the continuation of the marriage was based on him, meaning that in the end, he gives her a get to get divorced. So then that means that her staying in the marriage was because she wanted it. And it's all up to him, the Akavaz Min HaIsh. And therefore, what we're saying is, we have to view that as a marriage, and he remains permanently usher to marry her relatives, and she remains permanently usher to because she ended the marriage with a get. That's what it's saying. Nothing to do with the Mion issue. And because of that, she's considered to be a Megureshet, and she's possible to marry a Kohen. But if the marriage ended because of her, and she went ahead, it was Mima Enet, that is considered to be an Akava that is not Mina Ish. He is mutter to marry her relatives. She's mutter his relative. She must have annulled as if they were never married, and therefore she could go ahead and marry even a Kohen. What? But the Mishnah says afterwards, immediately after these words, it says that. It says, if a woman was Mima Enet, if he gave her a get, you're spelling that out one line later, for God's sake. So what are you telling me that that's what the meaning was? What Rebbe Eliezer was saying, that Akava Min HaIsh, he's telling you what's about to be said? It's ridiculous. What are we saying, the same thing twice in a row? No, he's introducing the next piece, which is being mefaresh. What do we mean when we say akava? See, it's always a problem when the Mishnayos are split up by the Gemara, then people get the wrong impression. This next piece was meant to be a continuation of that statement. And therefore, on Richie's sonar screen, we come up immediately with the words, and continues the Mishnah, Hamima Enet Beish, exactly what you said. Hu mutar bekrovotea, and he mutar bekrovav, velo paslam in a kahuna, masha enke natan la get, then hu asur bekrovotea, he asur bekrovav, and paslam min a kahuna. Now begins a series of halachas which go into the issue of what do we mean when you give a get, making a permanent iser? Because let me ask you something. Suppose the same guy that gave her a get takes her back, and a year later, she's mima'enet in him because she was still a ketana, and he took her back. She hadn't married anybody else. He's allowed to take her back. Anybody's allowed to take back a divorcee as long as they didn't marry anybody else, right? Okay, so he takes her back, and now a year later she's mima'enet in him. How about then? Do we say that? Well, let's look at the latest status. The latest status is she walked out on him. So obviously they were never really married. We can't make the first marriage more binding than the second marriage, can we? So then her latest status may be definitive of this iser, because maybe all the Mishnah was saying was, if a marriage terminates with a get, then there's no way for us to ignore the fact of that get, even though it was a kedushei miyun in the first place. But suppose the end of the series of relationships to this guy was with miyun, so then that's basically the end of the story. They were never really married because the Mion at the end proves that she was a Katana all along and that there was never really any marriage here in the first place. So note that this is similar to the question of an ex post facto Mion with which we started the whole discussion in the Perek. The case over there was a guy marries and he dies. And now she falls to the Yavam. When she gives Mion to the Yavam, is she being Mima Enet in her original husband? And that would mean that basically we are ex post facto annulling the original marriage, right? Now, the same issue occurs over here, except, of course, he didn't die, because if he had, he couldn't have had a very hard time marrying her again, unless, of course, he's one of those burials that has a fax machine and so on. Maybe you can send a shtar with a fax machine. I don't know. But anyway, in this case, man, I don't even get smiles anymore. I give up. Anyway, in this case, he didn't die. All he did was gave her a get. Okay, so now can she annul ex post facto in the second marriage and therefore essentially cancel the get? Now, this is what we're going to get into at this point. And it leads us to a little bit of a complicated situation. So let's talk about what happens. Suppose he did give her a get, but then he takes her back. Natan la get v'chzira. And then she does miyun to him after the second marriage. Now, she then goes and marries somebody else. And she ends up losing that husband because he dies or because he gave her a divorce. She can still go back to her first husband. Why? Because when she terminated her second marriage to her first husband, it was with Mion. And therefore, it's as if they were never married. And now he can take her back again. And in that case, there's no problem of a Marzir Grushato. So even though we said at the beginning that there's a halacha, but it ended with a get, we view her as being married to the guy. But since we said before that if he took her back and he went ahead and she was Mima Enet in him, that then she could come back to him, because it turns out now we look at the latest status of their relationship. Now, let's imagine a different case. She was Mima Enet now to the first guy, and then he took her back. And then what happened was, this is now the second marriage. The second marriage does not end with her Mion the way it did in the first case. The first case was that we ended the marriage with a get, he remarried her, and the second marriage ended with a Mion. Over here, we're talking about the opposite case. She went ahead, was Mima Enet, and he took her back after Mion. But the second marriage to him ended in divorce. And then she went ahead and she got married to somebody else. Now, in that case, he cannot take her back, because the marriage that he's taking her back to ended in a divorce. Now, listen, gentlemen, this is a little bit of a problem, because in this case, we ought to say that if she was Mima Enet, so then it should be basically an indication that they weren't really married. But what we're saying is, well, we don't look at that because she wasn't Mima Enet afterwards, so it can't possibly prove that. Now, where it gets interesting is, what would happen if she went ahead and got married to somebody else and was Mima Enet in that somebody else? Now, that already may change things. So what the Mishnah says here, and here's where it gets complicated. The Mishnah says, well, the rule is very simple. If a get was the termination of a second marriage and the first marriage had ended in Mion, then she's not allowed to go back to him, because then since the marriage terminated with the get, he would be a Marzir Grushato if she married someone else. But in the case where the last marriage was Mion and then she gets married to somebody else, then she can go back to him. So therefore, we always look at, what is it saying? Let's say she did this 10 times. She gets married to him. They divorce. She gets married to somebody else. He's not allowed to take her back. She gets married to him in the beginning, and there's miyun. She goes and marries somebody else. They get divorced. Then he can take her back. Then suppose she does miyun again. Then if she marries somebody else, he can still take her back. Suppose he gave her a divorce, but when he took her back, it ended in divorce. Then he can take her back. So we always take a look at the way that the most recent marriage to him, how did it end? Did it end with miyun or did it end with a get, right? Okay, now look at the case that is offered and note that it seems to cast doubt on the rule that we just said of Zeah Klal. Here it says like this. Someone is Mima Enet. She gets married to someone else who divorces her. Okay. Then she gets married to husband number three, and she does miyun to husband number three. Then she marries husband number four, and he gave her a get. And then she marries husband number five, and then she does miyun. This klal says, kol shiyotze mena beget asura lachzor lo, b'miyun muteret lachzor lo. So it seems to be, on the surface, just an expansion of our original rule. Namely, any husband to whom she had been married and the marriage terminated in divorce, if she had been married to anybody else, he cannot remarry her. Any husband, even if it was subsequent to a divorce from this other husband, any husband that she was married to in a marriage that terminated in miyun, even if she marries somebody else, she's allowed to go back to. But we do not say that a subsequent miyun was going to be mater her in the first husband or in the third husband, right? Again, the case is, if one guy marries her, divorces her, remarries her, then he does miyun, and she marries somebody else, it goes according to the latest situation. The latest situation is, how did she terminate her most recent marriage? With miyun. So if it was with miyun, she's a katana. So then she was never married to the first guy. He could take her back. How did she terminate the latest marriage? With a get? So then he cannot take her back because we don't have any indication that she's a katana. That's what the pashtus was, right? But here it says that it depends on her most recent relationship to this guy. And if her latest marriage was terminated by miyun, that would not change the previous marriage that terminated with the gerushin, and that gerushin would still define her as being asura to the krovim and everything else. And we don't look at a subsequent miyun as redefining her status as a ketana. Now, that is not consistent. Therefore, says the Gemara, now wait a minute. It says over there that if he gave her a get, you said, and then he remarries, and then she gave him miyun, and then she gets remarried, you said he's allowed to take her back. Why? He already gave her a get, right? So obviously, a later miyun cancels the status of her being a grusha that she was from before. So you see from there that miyun is a cancellation of a prior get. But then you go right ahead in the Mishnah and you say that in the event that she gave miyun and she gets married to another guy and he divorces her, and then she gets married to yet another guy and she was mima enes, and then she married another guy and he divorced her, et cetera, et cetera. The klal is that whatever her most recent status is to the same guy, then she's asura. If it's a get, she can't go back to him. If it's with miyun, she can. But that means that a later miyun is not going to cancel an earlier get. Now, what the heck? Make up your mind. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, you can't make up your mind. There's no way out of this contradiction. This is basically a reflection of two completely different approaches. And Tavra, Forget about it. Break the Mishnah into two. And Mishi Shana Zo, Lo Shana Zo, the Tana who said the first part, which allows a subsequent Mion to cancel an earlier get, is one Shita. We'll see what it's dependent on. And the Tana who says you look at only what the marriage per se was. Did it end with a get? Then she's Asura. Did it end with a Mion? Then she's Muteris. But we don't cancel a previous get by having a later Mion. Is somebody else? Oh, my Rava, what the heck are you talking about? Why is this a problem? I don't understand what the contradiction is. It's totally different cases. All that the Mishnah is saying is that a Mion to the same guy who had given her a get before is considered to cancel the previous get because it shows that her relationship to him was a Darabonan relationship that can be annulled. That's why it cancels the get. And the other part of the Mishnah was talking about her subsequent marriage to another guy. And it's saying that another guy that she's Mima Enes in is not going to undo the get that she gave to the first guy. Why is that the same? I mean, can't we figure out there's a reason for it to be different? So my question, Dilma Mion Didei is Mavato Get Didei. Yes, a Mion to him cancels his own get. But another person's Mion is not going to cancel the first guy's get. Well, says the Gemara to Rava, can you explain why it would be different? I mean, I thought that the reason that a Mion cancels a get is because of the simple fact that the latest state of Mion shows that she is a Ketana. And therefore, any idiot understands, well, she just walked out on a husband. Said, come on, man, how could she be Asura as having had a real marriage 3 years ago? She's even a Ketana now. That's what I thought it means. In which case, what is the difference if it's somebody else's marriage that she walked out on or his marriage? I mean, I understand, Rava, you're pointing to a difference, but there's no logical reason for that to really make a difference, is there? How do you explain the fact that there's a difference? Why is that? I'll tell you. The reason would be is that he has too good of a relationship, the first guy. The guy that divorced her, when she went ahead and she married another guy, okay? And now she is Mima Enes in that other guy. You know why it doesn't cancel the first guy's divorce? I'll tell you why. It's a gezeira. Because imagine the situation. The man divorces a Ketana. She marries somebody else. She could still walk out on him, right? On the second guy. Now, suppose he was allowed to marry her in the event that she just walked out on him and that he didn't die or get divorced, right? So then what happens if he decides he wants her back? And remember that the whole idea of this Kiddushei Mion is protection of children. Now, look how vulnerable she is, okay? She's married to the second guy. She knows her first husband intimately. He divorced her. So she recognizes his winks, his little crooked finger, his hey, and his funny little comments. Suppose he wants to turn her on to come back to him. And instead, even though he had divorced her, remember, he's making her feel, wow, this guy, he wants me back. So what is she going to do? She's going to go and be Mima Enet in the second husband and go back to him because it's as if they were never married and now that he can take her back even though she was married to somebody else. This is not protection from vulnerability, my friends. This is a disaster. So therefore, what we need to do is to protect her from that by saying, look, once you divorce her and she gets married to somebody else, you're not going to be able to play games and try to get her to be Mima Enet in this guy. You won't be allowed to take her back. That's the reason, okay? But why wouldn't that be true even if she was Mima Enet in him and she gets married to another guy? He could still try seducing her to come back to him and mess up her life with the second guy. Why doesn't that leave her vulnerable to him? Says the Gemara, what are you talking about? Leave her vulnerable. She walked out on him before. She wasn't vulnerable. She knew exactly how to stick up for herself. Why would she go back to him? In the case where he divorced her and there was no indication that she could stick up for herself. So then you're right. We're leaving her vulnerable when she marries somebody else because he can say to her, I divorced you, but you are my destiny. Boom, boom, boom. That's all he needs to do. And she comes running back. So therefore, there's a tremendous difference. So Esther Gemara, I'll see it inside. So Miyundi Day, even if she had been Mema'inis to him, why could he be Mavatel his own get? We should say the same thing. She is already very vulnerable to his Remizot, his Kreet Sotav. He's going to mess up her marriage to the second guy and get her to come back. Says the Gemara, what do you mean? He's tried to get her back because he tried to keep her. And she walked out on him. So obviously she's not as vulnerable little girl as you're claiming. So I don't need to protect her from him anymore. She says, don't try that shtick with me, you bum. I already know you. Ha ha. So, okay, we don't have to protect her from that. Hakvar Shapsha, Veloy Shapsha, he tried that. It didn't work. She's too smart for him. Okay. So therefore, Rava is absolutely right in saying that I don't understand why you made a kasha in the Mishnah. There is no kasha. There's an obvious difference between canceling your own get and canceling the other guy's get. And you know what? He's right. Absolutely right, says the Gemara. And therefore, the bottom line is that there was no problem. So we do not have to say that our Mishnah is written by two different people. Send regards to Hanalei on there. So you don't have to say that, right? Okay. So is there a problem with the Mishnah? Yes, there is a problem. That was similar to Rabbi Akiva in jail. So there is a problem. What is the problem? The problem is like this. Take a look at this. There's a problem in the relationship of the other guy's marriage. Because look, the Mishnah says that if she was mima'enet to the first husband, he marries her, then he divorces her. She goes and marries somebody else. Now look, how did the second marriage to the new guy, the marriage to this new guy, how did that marriage end? It says, if he gave her a get, or she he died, she can't go back to the first guy. Now, wait a minute. And what if it ended with Milan? And it didn't end in divorce or death, then what? Huh? Then what? Then she could go back to the first guy. Now, wait a minute. I thought you said that another person's miyun is not going to be able to cancel your miyun. So And now you're saying, no, it's only the other person's get won't cancel. You can't take her back. But another person's miyun that she did, then you could take her back, right? So Taima did his Hamrel on his Garsha. We're only saying you can't take her back because she was divorced. But suppose she had been Mima in it and the next husband, you could have taken her back. What does that show? Miyun to another husband allows the first husband who had given her a get to take her back. Now you're contradicting yourself within the din of the Chaver. So now Rava's making fun of the question. Is no longer valid. This is a problem. Because after all, look at the end of the Mishnah. Someone is Mima Enet Be'ish. She gets married to another guy. She then gets a divorce from the other guy. Then she marries a third guy and she gets a Mian from him. Then she marries a fourth guy. And then she gets Gerishin. And then she marries a fifth guy. And then she's Mima Enet. The ruling is whoever she was Yotze from with a get, she can't go back. Whoever she was yotzer from with Mian, she can go back, which means that you cannot utilize a second husband's or a fourth husband's or whatever the case is, Mian, to cancel an earlier husband's get. Now, that is a contradiction. And there, Rabbi Elazar says, now that is a contradiction. Tavra, forget it. There's no way to answer that contradiction. Misha shanazo, lo shanazo. And therefore, the Mishnah actually is a Mishnah said by two different Tanoim. Says Ula, no, even this is not a contradiction. I'll tell you why. It's simply because of People's Magazine. That's why. Nobody manages to get three times divorced unless they're a Hollywood star. That's the point. So the moment she's in her third divorce, it's already now headlines. Child bride divorced for the third time. Oh, my gosh. This is straight out of Hollywood. So therefore, everybody figures, ah, come on, she couldn't be a Katana. I mean, once she's already in Hollywood at this level, she's got to be one of these, you know, cigarette-smoking, high-heeled, older teenagers, right? That's why. That was the last case. Husband number one, husband number two, husband number three, husband number four, husband number five. It's too easily confused with Hollywood. So therefore, Kagon, Shishil Shabagitin. Ah, if she's already on her third divorce, then she is Mechazia Kigadola. Nobody suspects a child of having at the ripe old age of 7 years old to be a three-time divorcee. And therefore, they'll assume if it's in the papers, she probably is an adult. Okay. So now, you said, according to Rabbalaza, that there's two different Tanoim. Misha Shanazu, Lo Shanazu. Can you just tell me who the two different Tanoim are? Omer of Yudam Arav. You know, it used to be you wanted to ask a Shaila. It didn't cost you money. You went and you asked a Shaila. You wanted to have connection to the Eitz Chaim, which is Torah. You didn't have to pay for it. But now, as the Megillah Eicha says, Meimenu, nowadays the water that we drink, we have to pay for. Can you imagine? You can't even drink the water out of the faucet. You have to go and buy a bottle of water for 10 shekel if you're on the train. That's insane. Well, that's what happened to us since the Romans got to us. And therefore, when we need to ask Rabbi Akiva a question, we got to pay for it. Eitzenu of the Eitz Chaim hi. It comes for a high level price, you know, the mechir yavo. I'll tell you what happened. And during the Sha'at HaSakana of the Roman Gezeres, we needed to know what the halacha was, exactly this problem. A ketana was Yotze Mirishon Beget. She married her next husband. She was Mema'enetz in the next husband. Can she go back to the first husband or not? We had to hire somebody who was going to pretend to be a security guard in the Roman prison. That is not cheap. Okay, because there's 400 zuz to hire somebody who had the guts to make his way under false pretenses into the prison where Rabbi Akiva was, where he was able to ask Rabbi Akiva, what do we do? So he goes into the Beit HaSurin, Sha'alas Rabbi Akiva Beit HaSurin. Rabbi Akiva said she cannot go back to the first guy. Then they sent a message to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira in Nitzivin. And of course, Barnea was there to greet him and so on. There was no problem. And they asked Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, and he also said it's also. Whereas Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi says, nonsense. There never was such a question. Any idiot knows the answer to that. Lazolo Hutzrachna, of course it's mutter for her to get married to her first husband. This is the machlokas. Rav and Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. Now, even though normally when we say Tanoi, we don't include Rav as Tanoi, as Rashi points out, Rav is a Tana technically, and the latest Mishnayos may very well have been based on Rav, who, when he appears in a Mishnah, is hidden under the name of Rabbi Abba, which was his real name in Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos. But in any event, this was Rav against Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. And Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi says, any idiot knows that if we are a matir, an iser koris, right? I mean, we allow this woman to marry without a get. She's an Eishes Ish. That's a big iser. We said, nah, she's not really an Eishes Ish. Me and is good enough. You're going to tell me that we're going to be worried about the fact that he's taking back a woman that he was never married to, which is only an Isra Lav, even if he were married to her after she married somebody else? Nonsense. What did they have to go spend money to talk to Rabbi Akiva about this? Go to your local kindergarten. That's not the problem. So he obviously disagrees fundamentally with that whole sfar of Rav. I'll tell you, yes, they did actually spend a lot of money to go to Rabbi Akiva, but it was a different issue. This was the issue. Kach Shalom. What happened over here was that a ketana was married to a guy's mother's brother. Fine. She happened to be married to that guy who took her as a katana. And she ended up, now that a mother's brother's wife is an Isser Derabanan. Remember, it's a Shnia Derabanan, correct? Because since a father's brother's wife is a Deraisa, a mother's brother's wife is a Derabanan. Okay. And then she walked out on him. No, I mean, she went ahead and after she was a Shnia, he died. And then she went and married his actual brother, a Yavam, his brother from the same father. And now there's a problem of Yavam. So she is an Erva Midrabana to him because of her original marriage. She never did Miyun. The question that they asked, and this goes all the way back, this is why I wanted to finish it, because it goes all the way back to our original issue. Can she now do Miyun on that marriage to allow her to be mityabemet by the real brother? That's the question. So since the only thing preventing the marriage was the fact that she was once married to his mother's brother, and that is an issur d'rabbanan, but she could have been mima'enet in that marriage, but she didn't because the guy died. So now, can she go back and be mima'enet? Because that's what we do when there's a yavam, right? We said that according to Ula, if you have a yavam, then you can be mima'enet in the yavam, and that will undo the original marriage to the brother. That's how Ula understood it. So maybe you could do the same thing over here. In order to make it possible to get yibum in a mokum mitzvah where it's deraisa, where now she really was chayavis in yibum, maybe we should tell her to go back then and be mima'enet in the original marriage to the guy's mother's brother. And that way she'd be able to get yibum now. That was the question. And what we wanted to know was, yesh miyun li'achar mita, do we allow an ex post facto miyun if it's a pastumis miyun in the point of the husband, which we did allow in the opening Mishnah? If you held like Beit Hillel, he said you could be mima'enet according to Ula, mima'enet in the Zika by being mima'enet in the Yavam, which is actually a miyun to the original husband. I want to know whether in this case, can you do it to allow the mitzvah of Yibum even though it's not the same one? It's now the second marriage. That's my problem. For this, they hired two guys to pretend to be a cleaning crew. They went in with the same $400 that they had to pay. They got into the prison where Rabbi Akiva was. They asked him, and he said, no, you cannot. She's not able to be mityabemet. They asked Rabbi Yehuda ben Batera ben Etzivim, and Barnea told them, no, he says, you cannot. That is what happened.